Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We trust you had a very Merry Christmas, and we're glad that you're with us again for the third installment of our 6-year-end podcast, the Three Martini Lunch Awards for 2017. We've already handed out 6 prestigious awards, and today we're happy to issue 3 more from each of our perspectives. Today we'll be looking at the categories of Worst Scandal, Best Political Theater, and Worst Political Theater. So, Jim, what is the worst scandal of 2017?
The worst political scandal of the year is the Russian meddling in the 2016 election. I realize technically that occurred in 2016, but it's everything we've learned about it since then in 2017. Now, when I say Russian meddling, I mean, look, there was no doubt. I think it's pretty much indisputable that Russia was involved in the hacking of the DNC, in the hacking of John Podesta's emails, in the posting of them to WikiLeaks. We really should be seeing WikiLeaks as an extension of Russian intelligence and seeing everything they put out with a great deal of wariness and skepticism. There's 2 other kind of aspects of this. The second is, was there collusion with the Trump campaign? As of this discussion, no, I don't think that has been proven. Now, we have seen cases where, you know, emails were sent to Donald Trump Jr. said something, you know, oh, Russians want to help. And Donald Trump Jr. did not say, quick, get thee to the FBI. I want nothing to do with this. I think it's safe to say that Trump, look, he did not have a terribly experienced team of political pros around him. He had a bunch of amateurs and lackeys and hangers-on, all of whom thought it would be a really cool idea if the Russians were interested in helping. I believe one of his foreign policy experts, the guy who put Model UN on his resume, fell for some woman who said, oh, I'm Vladimir Putin's niece, without ever doing any Googling and recognizing that none of Putin's siblings or his wife's siblings had children. So you add that up, I guess he also responds to the Nigerian prince emails, things like that. So I'm troubled by that, but I'm also troubled by the fact that I don't know if we can trust the Federal Bureau of Investigation for the way they're investigating this. And Robert Mueller, it was just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about a couple of people that Mueller have hired have some, I believe 9 of them at last count have donated to Democrats in the past. By itself, that's not a problem. But again, this is a high profile case that may come to the conclusion or attempt to argue to America that the election was wrongly decided, or that the president of the United States before the election colluded with a hostile foreign state. This is really high stakes. You don't want to have a bunch of partisan hacks on this. The fact that one of the lawyers on Mueller's team represented the Clinton Foundation, are you kidding me? One of the lawyers represented one of Hillary Clinton's aides in the past. What, you couldn't find anybody else? These were the only people you could find? So all of those are bad. Then the text messages coming from high-level FBI officials saying about how much they can't stand Trump, that's bad. And then this vague allusion to an insurance policy. It makes the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or at least these folks at this very high level, look like a bunch of partisan hacks. And I don't want an allegation as serious as this being investigated by a bunch of folks who have an axe to grind. It looks very unprofessional. It looks like the politicization and of law enforcement, and the sense where you're starting to wonder, are they going after this person because that's really where the evidence took them, or are they going after this person because that's what their political desires are? So the Russia scandal strikes me as the worst, and I think what is the worst aspect of it is that the declining sense of faith we can have that it is being investigated fairly and accurately.
Excellent choice. And obviously that is the scandal that has dominated the headlines, certainly in one of those directions, if not the other. The second is kind of emerging now here at the end of the year. Jim, I also have a 2-pronged worst scandal of the year, and it kind of bumps up against the one you were talking about. But my double-headed monster here is the DNC. First of all, you've got Donna Brazile admitting that the DNC and the nominating process for 2016 was in fact rigged against Bernie Sanders in a number of ways, largely because President Obama left the DNC bankrupt, hadn't repaid it, and Hillary Clinton swooped in and kept the DNC afloat. And as a result, she basically called all the shots, and that did not work well for the Bernie Sanders campaign whatsoever, not to mention the fact that Donna Brazile was floating questions to Hillary Clinton at a couple different points during the primary season. And then, of course, we learned later in the year that the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign picked up the funding of the anti-Trump dossier that had been started during the Republican primary season and had been secretly funding that. And now, of course, there's lots of questions about the investigation that you were talking about and whether that's entirely based, including whether surveillance of Trump people was based on a at least partly faulty dossier put together, potentially with Russian sources, ironic enough. So, Jim, all across the board, we've got some pretty nasty scandals in 2017, and I think we've covered them pretty well here.
Yeah, and also let's emphasize, look, you very easily could have made the argument Me Too counts as the worst political scandal. I think because of the start with the Harvey Weinstein revelations and everything else, I saw that as more of a broad cultural scandal than a particular political scandal. So if anybody says, oh, how could you forget that? That's why I didn't put that one. It's the label of our category. But I could talk about that as being, you know, the worst scandal of the year anyway. So
absolutely. And it started in Hollywood. And of course, Weinstein had plenty of political ties. And then, of course, there's those that have fallen by the wayside here in Washington, from John Conyers to Al Franken, Blake Farenthold, and others along the way. We'll see how it all ends up turning out. Potentially more people won't be on the ballot next year is my suspicion. But let's move on to a category that I had to search pretty hard to find a good one for this year. Best political theater. What did you come up with?
Yeah, it was a rebuilding year for best political theater. But I did go back. It was a very short-lived moment, but I think it is worth remembering when you want to feel a little optimistic. I went with President Trump's joint address to Congress. They don't really call it a State of the Union in the president's first year. Look, for one night, President Trump sounded like a much more normal president. And of course, we had lots of spectacles of the Democrats refusing to applaud for very much. A bunch of Democrats announced that they would not dare be in the same chamber as that terrible man. By and large, the non-improvisational Trump, reading what I thought was a very well-crafted speech by his speech-writing team, did offer a fairly unifying agenda, conservative in many places, but hitting the right populist notes every now and then. And we just got – look, there's a professionalism to the Trump White House that isn't always there with the improvised, off-the-cuff answers and erratic behavior and just trusting his instincts and things like that. It acted like a normal White House for a night, and it got a lot of good reviews across, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, Donald Trump became the president that night, all kinds of reactions. It's worth remembering that there were a lot of people who may or may not have voted for Trump, but who wanted to see him succeed, who believed that the country was not in a great spot in the autumn of 2016, who whether it was, you know, just generally thinking that Obama had been pushed the country too far to the left, or whether the partisan rancor had gotten too intense, or if whether, you know, a certain portion of our elites had gotten into a comfortable bubble and had forgotten about what life was like for so many folks in quote unquote flyover country, the way that meth addiction and opioids were devastating communities, you know, small towns where the mill shuts down, the factory shuts down, the mine shuts down, and all of a sudden employment is much harder to find, the sense of declining opportunities for your children. These were all legitimate concerns that fueled Donald Trump's path to the presidency. And for a little while, he looked like he wanted to work with both parties and to build solutions to that. And it was a great moment. I think it's safe to say that is not Trump's instinctual style and mode. I think he would be well served if he returned to that. But for one night, we got something like that. And it was a president. Look, you know, listeners know I'm not always a huge fan of this president, but I think he does have the potential to be, if not a great president, then a very good president. But he would have to be a little more disciplined, a little more focused, a little less sensitive to everything he's seeing on the television, and focus on the work of the job and building legislative consensus instead of just reacting to everything he sees on the screen.
Excellent choice, and far more high-minded than mine. I went back to the idea that we had last year when we both said that the tears and weeping and gnashing of teeth on the left on election night was the best political theater. This doesn't quite rise to that level, unfortunately. But I take you back to mid-September. In early September, an interesting trend was happening there for a few days. It didn't last long, but it had a lot of people curious, and that's that Donald Trump seemed to be making progress and getting along well with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. They came to an agreement, it seemed, on two things. One, to keep the government open, which pushed the debate on that until December. And then there was also the issue of the Dreamers, because the Trump administration had said it is sunsetting the Dreamers program effective in March. And so that set the stage for potential legislation to codify the legalization of the Dreamers rather than the president doing it by fiat, which is unconstitutional. So Pelosi and Schumer say they pretty much have the framework of a deal in place with the president on this. In exchange, they'll agree to more enhanced border security, not the wall, but more border security provisions that the president wants. And Nancy Pelosi thinks this is a great win. So she goes and talks to a bunch of people in the immigrant activism community, probably a few people in the crowd who are here illegally, and she does not get the reception that she's expecting. Democrats do more.
Okay, you've asked some questions. Okay. I totally agree with you. But as we fight the fight for the Dreamers, which is our... Do you want to listen or do you just want to shout?
They don't want legalization for just the Dreamers. They want all 11 million people here illegally to be given legal status. And here's the next phase of this discussion.
Yeah, it's clear. It's clear you don't want any answers. Just stop it now. Let's stop it now.
But they didn't just stop it now, so...
Since you don't want to listen, we'll have to just go.
She just had to go. So much for the pep rally, Jim. It's interesting that when you start to give some of these all-or-nothing activists a little bit of what they want, they're not happy with that. You're a traitor unless you go all the way.
Deeply satisfying one there, Greg. Boy, they really are revolting, aren't they, Nancy? Have you ever felt more sympathetic to her? Or maybe even also more sympathetic to the people screaming at her, you know? It's one of those moments where, I don't know about you, Greg, they both have really good points.
Keep fighting. That's all I can say.
Don't give up the fight, either one of you.
All right. Finally, Jim, for today, worst political theater of 2017.
Well, look, there's a lot of strong contenders in this one. Kind of the inverse of my best political theater selection. There's an interesting question, Greg. Who really runs the country? Your first guess would say, okay, the president of the United States. But really, who shapes what the president of the United States sees, hears, thinks, and does? And I think you can make a strong argument that really, when you get down to it, the people who really run the country are the producers and morning guest bookers for Fox and Friends over on Fox News Channel, because that's what watches a lot of mornings, and people have tracked it and said, oh, you know, Trump, you know, at 9:10 in the morning, Fox and Friends will do a segment on this topic. And by 9:20, President Trump is tweeting about this. Clearly, he watches it. He either really enjoys something that's said about him or gets really upset about something that's said about him. And this gets him fired up, and he gets out his phone and he fires off some tweets. And there's nothing more annoying than writing a brilliant piece about having it go up that morning about, say, the debt, economic numbers, ISIS and Al-Qaeda, tax reform, Obamacare. And then all of a sudden this morning, Trump tweeted about LeVar Ball, and it's all over. It's done. And, you know, no one's going to talk about what you're doing, because, you know, this is what the – and here's the thing. A good portion of this blame goes on the media, because the media can say, ah, Trump yelled at LeVar Ball today, or, oh, Trump said something obnoxious about Mika Brzezinski today. And then we can go on to other things, but they choose not to. This turns into the dominant story of the morning for all the cable news shows. You see journalists on Twitter tweeting about it. Everyone feels the need to write up a little piece about it. This becomes the topic of the day. It was very interesting. It was not that long ago that Victor Davis Hanson, who is a pretty, if not across the board, I would say a consistently supportive or sympathetic to President Trump, basically said, Mr. President, it's now starting to get in the way of your accomplishments. You look back on this year, by a decent number of standards, the president did have a pretty good first year. The economic numbers are doing really well. The ISIS as a state is pretty much smashed and collapsed. Wages are up. Stock market is going bananas. Republicans have rolled back a bunch of regulations. A decent number of things have gone right for the president. He you'd think he'd like to talk about that, and he should talk about that. And every once in a while he does. But when he says, "Can you believe this particular celebrity on television said this about me? This celebrity's ugly." And boom, we're off to the races. And that's what our day is about. And I just kind of feel like it's a waste of a time, energy, and a Republican presidency to spend this much time fuming about what, you know, the Joy Behars of the world say, instead of focusing on actually changing policies and, quote unquote, making America great again. I think this administration has a good story to tell, and the president is too distracted by the television to tell it.
Excellent point. And yes, he's his own worst enemy on some days with distracting exactly from what he should be talking about. I mean, he's not had a lot of tweets about policy at critical times when he probably should have them. Instead, he's talking exactly what you said about things that are happening on TV or critics or breaking news or whatever. All right. Torn here again on Worst Theaters. You said many good nominees. Almost went with the NFL kneeling scandal and how Trump threw gasoline on that fire. And how ultimately, it still seems baffling as to how you think you're going to address that particular issue or why it's appropriate to address it by kneeling through the anthem. But I'm going to go more straight to hard politics here and go to the skinny repeal of Obamacare, the attempted repeal, I should say. I believe this was in late July. They had gone through what seems like a dozen different versions of the bill. They couldn't even get to a vote on a number of occasions. Then they tried to offer amendments to ones that didn't have the votes, and it looked like it was getting close. And then they had this skinny repeal that basically repealed the two mandates and got rid of the medical device tax and maybe one or two other things, far cry away from what the Republicans promised. When we first opened debate on this, John McCain comes in from his cancer diagnosis like a conquering hero, gives the thumbs up to begin debate, and then none of the amendments work. And finally they say, okay, throw this skinny repeal out here. It's almost embarrassing that this is all we can come up with. And it still goes down in the middle of the night with John McCain waiting till everyone else has voted and coming in and giving his slow thumbs down like he's the emperor at the gladiator fight, and thus died any effort to kill Obamacare or even mildly reform it in the United States Senate this year. We'll see what happens in 2018. But one of the greatest priorities, most important priorities, died in ridiculously dramatic fashion on the Senate floor.
That's a really good selection, Greg. And I kind of observe, it says something about our era that the difference between greatest hero in American history or worst monster in world history, it comes down to how you vote. People flipped on their perspective of McCain like it was a coin flip, 180 degrees instantaneously and you know, hyperbolic in both cases, and more than a little ridiculous, because by and large, McCain is the same guy. And if you see him as a guy who will, you know, going back to his Maverick days, there are days you'll love him and days you'll hate him, that you don't have to, then you're less surprised by these turns. And perhaps, you know, you shouldn't be, you know, perhaps people contain multitudes. Perhaps they're going to be good on one issue and bad on the other. And you should not suddenly, you shouldn't be having to make these kind of embarrassing about faces quite so regularly.
Exactly. Yeah, there were people, particularly on the left, and I wouldn't be shocked if there were some on the right who, you know, wished him a speedy death as a result of how he votes on a particular issue from time to time, whether it was taxes or health care. Really, really disgusting stuff. And that just absolutely has to stop. It won't, but it needs to. Anyway, we're in the middle of the holiday season, so be of good cheer. Jim, we'll be back tomorrow with three more categories.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.